More than 50 years ago, 8 women were killed inside a townhouse in South Deering, Chicago. There would have been a 9th victim, but the woman, a Filipino exchange nurse, was able to escape, and she would later bravely testify in court, positively identifying and pointing a finger at the mass murderer. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify. This is the story of Corazon Amorao, who in 1966 managed to escape death at the hands of mass murderer Richard Speck. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic and sensitive nature of this story. The US has had a long history of relying on Filipino healthcare workers to mend the staffing gaps in their healthcare system, and it's not just because Filipinos are a naturally friendly and hospitable people, but because it was also during the American occupation of the Philippines that many westernized nursing schools and medical systems were established in the archipelago. Visas to go to the US were limited during this period, but elite groups of Filipinos were able to travel to America to further their training, eventually returning to the Philippines to replace American nursing faculty at nursing schools. The Exchange Visitor Program, or EVP, established by the US in 1948, also allowed Filipinos to study and gain work experience in America for a maximum of 2 years. There was a shortage of nurses due to World War II, so American hospitals used the EVP to sponsor foreigners to fill their staffing deficit, favoring Filipinos as they were fluent in English and had already been trained in an Americanized nursing curriculum. Studying nursing became all the more appealing to Filipinos when in 1965 the Immigration and Nationality Act was passed, granting migrant nurses the opportunity to petition for a permanent stay in the US. The demand for nurses and other health services rose even further with the passage of Medicare and Medicaid that same year, as more Americans became eligible for healthcare. Corazon Amorao was one of the many Filipinos who pursued a career in nursing and then later applied to work as a nurse in the US. She was born and raised in a small village in the province of Batangas, and being one of 8 children, she grew up to be gritty and able to adapt quickly to new and challenging situations. She studied nursing at Far Eastern University in Manila and worked for 2 years afterward before applying for a nursing post in the US. She was not easily intimidated despite her small frame of 4 feet and 10 inches, and according to the dean of her nursing school, quote, she could adjust easily, she was calm, and she had a good presence of mind, end quote. These qualities would later come in handy in saving her own life. In May 1966, 23-year-old Corazon and 2 other Filipino nurses, Valentina Pasion and Merlita Gargullo, boarded a flight to be exchange nurses in the US. They pursued careers in Chicago, Illinois, and found employment as staff nurses at the South Chicago Community Hospital. The 3 lived with 6 student nurses at 2319 East 100th Street, a 2-story townhouse in the middle-class neighborhood of Jeffrey Manor, that the South Chicago Community Hospital was using as a nursing dormitory. Corazon fell into a routine of going to the hospital for work and taking a shuttle back to the townhouse afterward. When homesickness would hit her, she would write to her family in the Philippines, and sometimes Merlita Gargullo, who shared the bedroom with Corazon, would cook adobo and pancit, and they would invite the other women to eat with them after their hospital shifts. On July 13, a Wednesday, 2 months into living in the US, Corazon, as usual, finished work and took a shuttle back to the townhouse. After washing her clothes and writing to her family, she went to bed at 10:30 p.m., unaware of the frightening encounter ahead of her. 30 minutes later, a man armed with a .22 caliber pistol and hunting knife broke into the townhouse through one of the windows and made his way upstairs where the bedrooms were. Corazon opened her bedroom door to a knock, which she would later describe as, quote, done in a normal manner, end quote. She was surprised to see a man dressed entirely in black, with a towering figure and pockmarked face, who then held Corazon and Merlita at gunpoint. The 2 women watched, Terrified, as the man cut strips of fabric from their bed sheets, he then rounded up the other women, ordering them to empty their purses before tying them up to the beds with the strips of fabric. Of the 8 women Corazon was living with, 3 were not present at the time, but they were subjected to the same things as the others when they arrived at the townhouse later. Fortunately, the man was a little disoriented as he had just been drinking at several bars. Corazon, Merlita, and Valentina Pasion discreetly worked on loosening their hands from the fabric ties, and they saw an opportunity to quickly hide in a closet. As they listened to the muffled cries of the other women, they heard the man reasoning that he only needed cash to go to New Orleans. Corazon, Merlita, and Valentina heard a female voice from the other side of the door tell them to come out, saying, quote, "He's not going to harm you," end quote. This, however, wasn't true. One by one, the man took each woman from the room and killed them in different parts of the house, either by stabbing or strangling them, or both. Merlita and Valentina weren't spared, but Corazon was able to hide under one of the bunk beds while the man was in another room. Corazon moved from room to room, witnessing the deaths of her friends, until finally, perhaps losing track of the number of women in the townhouse, the man left sometime past 3 a.m. Corazon remained patiently hidden until about 6 a.m. to ensure he was gone for good. She then crawled out from her hiding spot, scaled an upstairs window, and for about 5 minutes screamed for help, quote, "They are all dead. My friends are all dead. Oh God, I'm the only one alive," end quote. She jumped off to a ledge on the street below and screamed for about 20 minutes more until a man walking his dog passed by. Officers from the Chicago Police Department soon arrived, and Corazon gave them a detailed description of the killer and pledged to assist them in any other way she can. 2 days after the massacre, the perpetrator was admitted to the Cook County Hospital, about 26 kilometers or 16 miles northwest of the crime scene. He had slashed his wrists in an attempt to commit suicide, but changed his mind at the last minute. His distinct tattoo that said "Born to Raise Hell," a description that Corazon had given to the police and had then been circulated in the papers, was recognized by his attending physician, Dr. Leroy Smith, who then promptly notified authorities. Policemen watched over him during his surgery to ensure he won't escape, and Corazon, who was also notified by the police, visited the man's bedside and identified him as the perpetrator. The man was Richard Benjamin Speck, who was born in Kirkwood, Illinois on December 6, 1941. Speck had a very close relationship with his father, who passed away in 1947. 3 years later, in 1950, Speck's mother married a traveling insurance salesman who was not just often drunk and verbally abusive or otherwise absent, but also had a 25-year criminal record ranging from forgery to DUIs. Aside from the absence of a good father figure, Speck spent most of his childhood living at different addresses, and he refused to wear reading glasses that he needed, all factors that contributed to his struggles in school. He started drinking alcohol at the age of 12, and his criminal record began when he was only 13. His first arrest had been for trespassing, followed by dozens of other arrests for misdemeanors. This would escalate to disturbing the peace after a drunken altercation in 1962, for which Speck was jailed for 22 days, while his teenage wife, whom he had married when he was 20 and she was only 15, was giving birth to their daughter. Speck's rap sheet would only grow longer from then. By March 1966, when Speck was 25, he had divorced his wife and added forgery, burglary, and aggravated assault among dozens of other charges to his record. Hearing the news of his ex-wife remarrying just 2 days after the divorce triggered a series of more heinous crimes, such as raping a 65-year-old woman in Monmouth, Illinois, and killing a 32-year-old barmaid in the same city with a blow to her abdomen. In April 1966, with help from his sister Martha and her husband Jean, who had served in the US Navy, Speck found work as an apprentice seaman aboard Inland Steel's bulk ore lake freighter Clarence B. Randall. His first voyage on the ship, though, was cut short as he was stricken with appendicitis in May and needed to be flown to St. Joseph's Hospital in Hancock, Michigan for an emergency appendectomy. Speck stayed in Chicago with his sister Martha after getting discharged from the hospital. He rejoined the Clarence B. Randall crew but served only until June 14 when he got drunk and quarreled with one of the ship's officers. The following week, Speck traveled by train to Michigan to visit a nurse's aide he had befriended at St. Joseph's Hospital. After receiving $80 from the nurse's aide to help him until he found work, Speck returned to his sister Martha and her family in Chicago. On June 30, Martha's husband Gene drove Speck to file paperwork for a seaman's card at the National Maritime Union, or NMU, hiring hall. This was located at 2335 East 100th Street in the Jeffrey Manor neighborhood of South Deering, Chicago, just 150 feet from the two-story townhouse where Corazon Amorao and the other women lived. On July 8, Speck was again driven by Gene to the NMU hiring hall to pick up his seaman's card and register for a berth on a ship. He was disappointed to find out, however, that a seaman with more seniority for a berth had taken what would have been his spot on a cargo ship bound for South Vietnam. 3 days later, on July 11, Speck had outstayed his welcome at Martha's house. He was driven by Gene to the NMU hiring hall to await a berth on a ship, but he ended up staying the night at a rooming house in the Vets Park neighborhood of South Deering. Speck returned to the NMU hiring hall the next day. In mid-afternoon, he got assigned to a tanker 30 minutes away in East Chicago, Indiana, only to discover upon his arrival that his spot had already been taken. He was driven back to the NMU hiring hall, which was already closed, and he didn't have enough money for a rooming house, so he dropped off his bags at a gas station a few blocks away and slept in an unfinished house just off East 103rd Street. The following day, on July 13, Speck retrieved his bags and returned once more to the NMU hiring hall. Martha and Gene drove down to visit him at 9 a.m. They parked on East 100th Street, next to Luella Elementary School, across the street from Corazon's townhouse, and Speck spoke to them in the car, still angry about the previous day's events. Speck grew tired of waiting for a job at the NMU hiring hall, so at 10:30 a.m. he used some of the $25 Martha had given him to check in at Shipyard Inn on East 101st Street. He spent the remainder of the day drinking in nearby bars before accosting another patron, a 52-year-old woman named Ella Mae Hooper, at knife point. Speck took her to his room, raped her, and stole her .22 caliber pistol. Dressed all in black and carrying his knife and the pistol, he had dinner at the nearby Case Pilot House and had drinks at the Shipyard Inn's tavern. At 10:20 p.m., he walked about a mile and a half or 2.4 kilometers west until he arrived at Corazon's townhouse and killed the other 8 women. The victims were Gloria Jean Davy, 22, strangled; Patricia Ann Matusik, 20, strangled; Nina Jo Schmail, 24, strangled, her neck broken and stabbed superficially; Pamela Lee Wilkening, 20, stabbed through the heart; Mary Ann Jordan, 20, stabbed 3 times in the chest and once in the eye and neck; Suzanne Bridget Ferris, 21, stabbed 18 times in the chest and neck; and Filipinos Valentina Pachon, 24, her throat slit; and Merlita Ornado Gargullo, 23, stabbed and strangled. Speck later claimed to have no recollection of the bloody crime, but he had confessed it to Dr. Leroy Smith, who attended to him at the Cook County Hospital. Smith didn't testify, as the confession had been made while Speck was under sedation, but according to Illinois Supreme Court Justice John J. Stamos, during the trial, the confession was unnecessary as they had a credible eyewitness. 9 months after the massacre, sole survivor Corazon Amorao was asked in court to identify the killer of the 8 women. Rising from her seat in the witness box, she walked directly in front of Speck, pointed a finger that nearly touched his forehead, and said, quote, "This is the man," end quote. Corazon also described the murder in detail using a scale model of the townhouse. Her testimony was supported by Speck's fingerprints at the crime scene, and on April 15, 1966, after only 49 minutes of deliberation, the jury found Speck guilty of 8 counts of murder and recommended the death penalty. He was later given the sentence to die by electric chair, but in 1972, after the US Supreme Court abolished capital punishment, Speck was resentenced to imprisonment of 50 to 150 years for each count of murder, or 400 to 1,200 years, which was later reduced to 100 to 300 years. He was incarcerated at the Stateville Correctional Center in Crest Hill, Illinois, but in the early morning hours of December 5, 1991, just one day before turning 50, Richard Speck died of a heart attack. Shortly after Speck's conviction, Corazon Amorao returned to the Philippines where she worked as a nurse and also served on her town's council. She married lawyer Alberto Atienza in 1969 and eventually moved back to the US with her family, working as a nurse at Georgetown University Hospital in Washington and then at the Veterans Administration Medical Center. She had two children with her husband, one of whom, her daughter Abigail, also chose to study nursing. In 2016, on the 50th anniversary of the massacre, the lead prosecutor in the case, William Martin, shared in an interview that he had been in contact with Corazon all these years. She had retired about 5 years earlier and now spent most of her time with her family, visiting her relatives in the Philippines every 3 years, and still keeping in touch with the families of the slain nurses. According to Martin, Speck's mass murder, which was the first random one of the 20th century, had a profound impact on American society. Quote, "It ended an innocence we all had. A lot of us never locked our doors, but the Speck case changed all that," end quote. Corazon had told Martin in an email that she was still suffering from nightmares that Speck will return to kill her. Though she would sometimes wonder why she was spared, quote, "I think there was somebody up there who was hiding me from him. God was so nice," end quote. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This episode was written, narrated, and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.